Welcome to What We Learned Today, the official podcast of the DEVCOM Army Research Laboratory. I'm Stephen Park with the ARL Office of Strategic Communications. Today, we celebrate Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander Heritage Month by recognizing the immense contributions of Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders to our nation, particularly those who have served and continue to lead the way in securing America's future. This year's theme, Advancing Leaders Through Innovation, highlights the critical role diversity and inclusion play in our nation's success and readiness. Our guest today is Dr. Jessie Chen, an Army senior research scientist and a native of Taiwan who earned her doctorate in applied experimental and human factors psychology. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Chen. Could you please introduce yourself a little?
So I am the ST for Soldier Performance and Social Technical Systems. I joined ARL in 2003. It has been 21 years, and I became the ST for Soldier Performance in 2018. So that's been almost 6 years, since I became ST.
Would you be able to tell us a bit more about yourself and share with us what your life was like growing up?
Yes, I was born and raised in Taiwan. My father was an army doctor and a government official working in the National Health Ministry after he retired from the military. My mother was an entrepreneur and a small business owner. And I grew up in Taipei, the capital city of Taiwan. After I graduated from college, I came to the States for grad school at the University of Michigan. And that's when I met my husband, who's also a grad student from Taiwan.
I see. And so how would you describe your connection with your cultural heritage and roots, especially having moved to the United States?
Well, I think my Taiwanese background, especially when I, what I learned during my formative years in Taiwan, has a profound influence on me. For example, during my AANHPI Heritage Month talk a couple of years ago, I mentioned three core values that are commonly important in AANHPI communities. And that is value of education, work ethic and perseverance, and importance of teamwork. In fact, school children in those communities are taught folk stories that illustrate the importance of those values. For example, for education, there's a story about a Mrs. Meng who moved her family three times to search for an ideal place to raise her son, who went on to become one of the greatest scholars in the Chinese history. And for perseverance, there's a story about a stubborn old man who vows to remove a mountain that's blocking his community's access to a nearby town. And he says, if I cannot finish this task in my lifetime, my children and grandchildren will continue the effort until it's accomplished. For teamwork, the story of an unbreakable bundle of chopsticks. Each individual chopstick is easy to break, but a bundle of chopsticks make them unbreakable. So these stories or similar stories are taught to young children in Asian societies to show them the value of these virtues. And I think I still benefit from those lessons I learned at a young age when growing up in Taiwan.
That's really interesting, given that I'm very familiar with all three core values that you mentioned as well. given sort of my origins, I grew up being told the story of the grasshopper and the ant.
Yes.
Regarding work ethic, how the grasshopper just played all summer while the ant worked. And in the end, the ant had food for the winter. So my parents were very big on work ethic, about working hard, doing well in school, and then you will bear fruit of your of the things that you've accomplished in the future. Mm-hmm. So that was pushed really heavily on my end as well.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Interesting about the teamwork, though. So given the three core lessons that you've mentioned, Are there any sort of instances in your life that directly sort of you pulled that from?
I think for teamwork, you know, we do that all the time in our, you know, efforts in research or just regular laboratory activities that we engage in. We work with our teammates. And so, in fact, I think nowadays, a lot of us in the laboratory are working on Army modernization related efforts. There's a sense of urgency. And I think it's almost that all hands on deck, that kind of sense of urgency. And I think that working together to tackle those hard problems, that's definitely something that's the concept of teamwork is really relevant in what we do and in our pursuit of excellence.
I see. So that really sticks out to me because teamwork hasn't been really sort of introduced to me till later in my childhood. My family actually is still in Korea, and it's only my parents and my sister living in America right now. So it was more about resilience. And even though it's just small, it's just the, you know, just the four of us being able to do the best that we can. Actually, my first lesson about teamwork was when we spent time back in Korea. We were, me and my extended family were working on some project to help around the house. This was back when I was still young. I didn't really feel like contributing. And then my father told me how important it was to sort of everyone to pitch in. And even though you haven't really, you know, I don't really know my extended family. I don't know my cousins and uncles all that well. It's still important to help out and work together because of that family bond.
That's great.
So are there sort of any similar lessons or experiences you've had connected to your family that sort of influenced your life decisions in any way?
Yes. My pursuit of a career in the military was definitely influenced by my father, who was an army doctor in Chiang Kai-shek's military. His, you know, dedication to serving the soldiers, literally taking care of them, you know, was what motivated me to pursue a career of studying soldier performance.
I see. So what does Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander Month mean to you?
Well, this Heritage Month celebration has a tremendous meaning to me. Well, since the first, you know, waves of AAPI immigrants arrived in the United States in the 19th century, which is also when Hawaii became, you know, part of the United States, the AANHPI have come a long way in shaping the U.S. to become what it is today. Being a first-generation Asian American, I'm glad I made the decision to stay in the United States after grad school. And every May, you know, when we celebrate the AANHPI Heritage Month, we are reminded of the challenges that those first-generation immigrants have to overcome. And we are grateful that those first-generation immigrants and the generations after them pursued the American dream and contributed to the success of the United States.
I see. And today, even today, we still face a lot of challenges due to our race and our background. Has your race or ethnicity impacted your journey as a scientist or researcher? Were there any sort of challenges or obstacles or barriers that you've personally encountered?
One barrier I'd like to point out for first-generation immigrants of any ethnicity, really, English is often not their first language. Many countries, for example, in Taiwan, when I grew up, English education started in middle school. Although I've been in the United States for over 30 years, I still find myself using my first language, which is Mandarin, when doing difficult tasks such as remembering a long string of digits.
Do you still speak Mandarin with your family?
Yes. In fact, I have two sons, two adult sons, and both speak fluent Mandarin. Yes, Mandarin is spoken at home.
I came to the United States when I was young, and while I was fluent in Korean back then, I picked up English really quickly. It got to a point where English has become my predominant language rather than Korean. In fact, I still sort of I struggle a little bit trying to speak it and really learn it back again, because it's so, I have so much English exposure. With my parents, yeah. I speak Korean, but it's sort of gotten down to more of a middle school level sort of Korean. So I'm starting to pick that up again.
Do you read Korean?
Yes. Ooh, I used to read some Korean. It's tough because I speak a lot. I speak Korean when mm-hmm. I speak to my parents. I call them mm-hmm. every week and I talk to them in Korean. And that mm-hmm. way I know I keep my memory of speaking Korean and then understanding Korean when someone mm-hmm. speaks it to me. The mm-hmm. problem is there isn't a lot of opportunities like that where I can learn the Korean language through books or through text. So the letters and the grammar, fell behind as a result. And that's what I found really hard to keep back up.
Uh-huh.
When I go see my relatives back in Korea, I can't speak as well to my grandparents. And I have to sort of explain to them that I lost a good chunk of it. So that's a little embarrassing. So, but it is great to have that language you were raised with still with you in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, on the topic of language, would you say that given that you can speak both Mandarin and English, is there one that you mostly think in over the other? Is it both?
I think both now. I think, as I said earlier, I think only when it's, you know, a very challenging, you know, cognitive task, such as remembering a long string of digits, I just, you know, I find it easier to use Mandarin for that kind of task. But normally, I think I just use both.
Do you have a lot of opportunity to speak Mandarin, whether with your family members or with acquaintances that you know, or because, you know, the United States is so English dominant, do you find right. communities to speak in your native tongue?
Yes. Well, other than, speaking to my, you know, family members, I'm also a member of a Tai Chi group, you know, in my community. So, and they're, Taiwanese Americans in that group.
Oh, no, that's excellent. I was part of a tight-knit community back then. We attended a church, a Korean-American church, and we spoke a lot of Korean. Mm. I lost contact with that, though. So now it's even less. I have less opportunities to practice speaking Korean and speaking with other Korean-Americans. mm-hmm. I'll have to pick it up traditionally through books now.
I'm sure there are a lot of online resources you can use.
I'll try my best. So it's tough. I tried multiple times. It's because the language is so different from English too. So the different alphabet
right.
and all that.
See, that's the challenge. That's the barrier I was talking about, right? So especially for Asian Americans, especially if they're first generation immigrants.
Yeah.
And because English is so different from Asian languages, it's definitely,
just completely different system. The letters are complete. At least with like European languages, like French or Spanish, mm-hmm. you could see remnants of English and sort of tie it together with the Asian languages. It's you have to start from scratch.
And also, as I pointed out, in Asian countries, normally English education doesn't start until like middle school. And that's not ideal, right? Because you want to expose children to foreign languages when they're young. And it makes it a lot harder.
Yeah. By middle school, it's sort of they start solidifying what they mm-hmm. know. So you lose a bit of an opportunity there.
That's right.
I have, I'm trying to learn Chinese too. I'm trying to learn Mandarin myself.
Cool.
It's a little ambitious trying to relearn Korean and Mandarin, but I really do want to learn. I actually knew Japanese because I spent a year in Japan when I was around 5 years old. So I was fluent in Japanese because I was so young and I picked it up very quickly. But
right.
Yeah, no, and I really liked it. I really liked speaking Japanese, and I lost that because I had to learn English, and that took precedence. So I'm trying to. My goal is to relearn Korean and then Japanese, and then learn Mandarin. And I have so I grew up with Korean, and I'm familiar a little bit with Japanese because I spent a year in that country. Mandarin has been difficult because I've noticed that the pronunciation, even what I'm used to, is very different.
And there are tones.
Yes.
Korean
and Japanese are very staccato. They're very segmented, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Whereas it does feel different with Mandarin. Would you say that seems about?
Yeah, definitely. Like, for example, my Chinese name, it's spelled as Yunsheng, my first name. It's Yun Sheng. Okay, so for Yun, you can have four different tones, right? Yun, 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 Yun. It's both, the spelling is exactly the same, Y-U-M, but you have four different tones. And mine is the fourth tone, Yun. And same thing for Sheng, right? So that's the first tone. And you have Sheng, 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 Sheng. All the exact same spelling, but different tones. So yeah, definitely it's very challenging for... for people to master
absolutely
your language. Yeah.
Yes. Even in Korean, we don't have that. Like my Korean name is Park Eun-soo, and there's only one way you can say it. It's very like Park Eun-soo. So, So learning how different ways to say the same characters in Mandarin is, it's like four times as hard to remember because I feel like, oh, you have to say it this way to mean this. So it's really unfamiliar with me.
I guess, languages have their unique, difficult parts or, challenging parts. Like, for example, for languages like Spanish, or French, you have to remember, it's feminine or masculine, nouns. And so, yeah, and that's hard. And all the variations for verbs, right? So, and for Chinese, that actually the grammar is, grammar is very easy, very straightforward. But the tones and the characters, the writing or the reading part is definitely very challenging.
Yes, but I think it's still very rewarding and very worth it in the end to be able to master a language like that.
Same here.
I really enjoy this language topic. So the theme for the 2024 Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander Heritage Month is Advancing Leaders Through Innovation, which pays homage to visionaries and trailblazers who have made significant contributions to our nation's economic prosperity, technological advancement, and social or political change. Are there any particular contributions or achievements made by Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, or Pacific Islanders that you wish to highlight?
Yes, I'd like to highlight the impact of three individuals with Taiwanese background: Morris Chang, Jensen Huang, and Lisa Su. All three are key players in the semiconductor industry. So I'd like to highlight those three Taiwanese Americans.
Those are very big names that you mentioned. Very big players in the semiconductor field.
Especially nowadays with the importance of AI. They're playing very important roles.
They have a lot of attention drawn on them because of just how I see a lot of news regarding the activities of all those companies. And I imagine it will only continue as AI and other technology advances. On this track of leadership, could you tell us more about your leadership experiences or examples of leadership that you've encountered? So in your opinion, what makes a good leader, both in research and within the Army?
In my mind, a good leader knows when and where to seek help. He or she knows how to delegate and help their subordinates grow. A great leader shows he or she cares, not only about your work, but also about you as a person. And a great leader tries to be transparent about his or her decision-making process, both the rationales behind the decisions and the projections of future outcomes, so everyone is on the same page. And for many years, I've been working on transparency related topics in my research in the context of a human working with intelligent systems. And I think the same principles of transparency to support effective human machine teaming also apply to effective leadership. And that's transparency about the reasoning process, for example, the constraints that the leader is dealing with or struggling with, and projections of future outcomes. And transparency requires a lot of thoughtfulness, you know, what to share and what not to share, and when and how to share the information. But great leaders know how to do it just instinctively.
Yeah, that really does seem to play into the communication and making sure that not only that you're able to communicate your intentions and the rationale behind your decisions, but also communicating how much your team members mean to the overall performance of the team. So
yes,
it really does seem like being a great leader then is having that instinctual balance, because it's tough. Knowing how much to communicate. Are there any way to sort of know for sure that you're aware of? I've noticed that sometimes it's tough. You don't want to overshare, but you also definitely want to make sure everyone's in the loop. What's the secret in this?
Well, so that's what I said, you know, it requires a lot of thoughtfulness and intelligence. It's not easy, right? So, and obviously you don't want to be too transparent, overly transparent, and that's not good either. In fact, so in my research on transparency, our group developed a framework that's called Situation Awareness-Based Agent Transparency. So basically, the objective is to promote the situation awareness of the information recipient. So like you're the communicator, and the goal is to share enough information so the information recipient can have proper situation awareness of what's going on, and why things are what they are, and what he or she can expect in the future as a future outcome based on current actions and decisions. You know, the same principle applies to leadership. Basically, you want that your subordinates or your teammates to have proper situational awareness of what's going on and why things are that way and the future outcomes or projections. So you deliver or you communicate the information to help them with, you know, to support their situation awareness. Again, you know, it's challenging, especially in my research, we're talking about intelligent agents, like, you know, robotic agents or AI agents. To develop that kind of intelligence definitely is a hard problem.
Yeah, I imagine, especially given the nuance and complexity of situations, being able to implement that thoughtfulness to the technology, I imagine that is sort of a big goal for you and your colleagues.
Yes, definitely.
So how do you help foster innovation within the Army?
My lab, before I became an ST, was fortunate to have an opportunity to work on two projects under the Autonomous Research Pilot Initiative sponsored by DOD. And the two projects are the Autonomous Squad Member Project and the Impact Project. This is about 10 years ago. And the topic we focused on for both projects was agent transparency. And as I mentioned, developed a framework that's called a Situation Awareness-Based Agent Transparency, or SAT, and it's commonly known as the SAT model, to help us organize the essential elements of transparent human-machine communications. And the original SAT model was introduced in an ARL tech report, which was published 10 years ago, and it still gets cited quite a bit today. The SAT model has been used by numerous R&D groups, both in the United States and internationally. And they use the model for their user interface designs or human factors experimentation. And the application areas are quite diverse: human-robot interaction, multi-agent management, swarm robotics, autonomous driving, explainable AI, pilot aircraft interface, cyber analytics, intelligent tutoring systems, and even intelligent agents for corporate IT system management. So I'm, you know, very proud for the team that the SAT model was recognized as one of the DEFCOM success stories of transition last year. And a DEFCOM analysis center researcher who used a SAP model in her warfighter machine interface design efforts also received a major innovation award at DAC. So I have to say, I'm really proud of my research group's effort on developing the SAP model 10 years ago, and it continues to foster innovation related to AI and autonomy around the world today.
I see. No, that's incredibly impressive to hear. And my congratulations to you and your team on that achievement.
All right. Thank you.
Yes. On that same sort of topic, just like with you mentioned with intelligence and thoughtfulness, do you think innovation is a key ingredient in leadership?
I think definitely you want to foster and promote the environment and atmosphere to encourage that mindset.
Right. You want leaders to think outside the box and come up with new ideas and put in different perspectives, things like that.
Yeah, or recognize good ideas when they are raised. Yes.
Right. And not be sort of limited in their sort of perspective on what would work and what wouldn't work.
That's right.
Are there any role models that come to mind? Is there anyone you see as a major inspiration or motivator in your life, past or present?
My father is my greatest role model. Besides his devotion to taking care of soldiers, he also taught me several principles I still find useful today. He taught me the importance of being tolerant and not being judgmental. Try to put yourself in others' shoes before you form an opinion. So timeless advice like this was useful when I was growing up in Taiwan, and it's still useful today.
I see. No, I definitely agree with that. So to close off, I have one last question. What advice would you give to your younger self, as well as those who are still currently trying to establish their identity and find their place in the world? What would you say to these people and to your younger self, of course?
Yeah. Well, I think I'd like to go back to the three core values I mentioned earlier. For the value of education, keep learning. Take advantage of the many great opportunities available and educate yourself. For perseverance, keep trying. The road to success is often hard. And seek a mentor and be a mentor. Everyone has something valuable that you can learn from. And for teamwork, be an active contributor to your organization and your community. And remember that chopsticks bundled together are unbreakable. So that's my three pieces of advice.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Do you have any other thoughts regarding this month about your heritage or just the theme of innovation and advancing leadership through it?
Well, I think I mentioned this earlier. Many of us in the lab are working on Army modernization related efforts. So there's really a great sense of urgency. The challenges are great and the time is short. So I hope and I think the three core values I shared today are relevant in our pursuit of excellence.
Really, thank you for joining us today, Dr. Chen. And thank you for joining us as well. Please visit our special feature page by following the link on ARL Inside to find resources, helpful links, and our spotlight stories in honor of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. For the Army Research Laboratory, I'm Stephen Park.